Hi, I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm the host of Vermont Edition, and I just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. There's a lot going on in Washington, D.C. these days. Congress has just passed a budget agreement that will bring new money to Vermont. There's a debate over gun control legislation, and there's the possible regulation of Facebook following the recent disclosure of security breaches during the 2016 election. Some members of Congress are also concerned that President Trump might try to fire Special Counsel Robert Mueller if Mueller demands financial information from Trump. South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham is a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. He's backing legislation to protect Mueller from being fired.
I think Mr. Mueller is the perfect guy to get to the bottom of all this, and he will. And I think my job, among others, is to give him the space to do it. I intend to do that. I've got legislation protecting Mr. Mueller, and I'll be glad to pass it tomorrow. It's pretty clear to me that everybody in the White House knows it'd be the end of the President Trump's presidency if he fired Mr. Mueller. So I think we're in a good spot with Mr. Mueller.
Where is this investigation headed, and will it ultimately show any collusion between the Trump campaign and Russian officials? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today, and that is Senator Patrick Leahy, who joins us from the Senate Recording Studio in Washington, D.C. Senator Leahy, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Well, thank you very, very much. It felt great to be home in Vermont last weekend. About 3 o'clock this morning, as I was heading away from the Capitol, I was thinking of the quiet Middlesex or places like Marshfield, where my sister Mary lives. And it's a little bit different than Washington's been the last few days.
And we want to talk to you about some of the events down there and the reason that you were up so late last night. That was the omnibus budget bill. You serve as the vice chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee. For weeks, you've been involved in helping to frame a budget for the rest of the fiscal year. This week, Congress reached agreement on a $1.3 trillion compromise plan that increases both domestic and military spending. This morning, President Trump tweeted he might veto the bill. What's your reaction to that?
You know, it's almost impossible to keep up with the tweets of the president. He contradicts himself sometimes 5 times in a day. He, of course, had told the Republican leadership that he would sign the bill, and then almost like, gee, you passed it. You're kind of ignoring me. I'll threaten to veto it. Well, let's see what his veto would mean. He's abandoning $700 billion for the troops. He's abandoning health care for 7 million veterans. And he's doing this why? Because he had promised that Mexico would pay for a wall along our southern border. He knows that promise is not going to be kept. So now he wants the taxpayers to pay $30 billion. Well, he's the one that stop protections for our DACA recipients, the Dreamers. He held them hostage for his boondoggle of a wall. It's time to be a grown-up in this, and let's just look at what's in this bill. You had very good people, Republicans and Democrats, who worked like mad. My staff and I have been working for several weeks, 7 days a week, sometimes at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, to put together a bill that would represent the interests and needs of the United States. That's not a bill that should be vetoed.
What would be the impact if the president does veto this bill? We've got members of Congress who are now on their way home to their respective states and districts. It would lead to a government shutdown, wouldn't it?
Yeah, the government was shut down at midnight tonight. There's two reasons I'm staying here in Washington this weekend. One is vice chairman of the Appropriations Committee. I intend to be here in case something like that does happen. And secondly, Marcel and I are doing a reception. We've got a large area that we provide, do a reception, coffee and donuts and whatnot, for all the students, and we expect several hundred coming from Vermont to march and rally here in Washington tomorrow, asking for responsible gun control. And so we don't want them to feel they're all alone down here. They won't be, of course, but Marcel and I and people in my office are going to make sure we have a reception here for them. And I expect that there'll be a large group in parts of Vermont. I know my sister Mary told me about the huge number that rallied for the Women's March in Montpelier a year ago.
You mentioned that the president offered two reasons why he might veto this bill, one being there's not enough money for the Mexican wall, the other being no action on the Dreamers. These are the children of undocumented workers who were brought into this country by their parents. Now, dealing with this issue has actually been one of your top priorities. So the question is, why wasn't it addressed in this bill?
Because the president changed his mind several different times about what he would do and whether he would sign it, whether he wouldn't. He said he would veto anything that did not have $25 to $30 billion of American tax dollars in a wall that he said someday, maybe in 100 years, Mexico would pay for. Well, we have a lot of people, Democrats and Republicans, if the president would actually keep the same position for more than 24 hours at a time, we could pass a Dreamers Act. Dreamers should, it's the most cynical thing in the world, use Dreamers as a bargaining chip just so that you can pass a whole series of ultra-right-wing, anti-immigrant reforms. You know, I think of what would have happened if some of the things they want today. My maternal grandparents emigrated to Vermont from Italy. My mother was born in Vermont, but they ran a very good stone shed, hired a lot of people. My great-great paternal grandparents emigrated to Vermont in the 1850s from Ireland, and then again had people who created jobs. I wonder if any of them would have gotten in under some of the immigration things that this administration wants.
The omnibus budget bill does contain some new provisions for the state of Vermont as well as many other states. Do you think that the increase in funding for efforts to combat the opioid epidemic is one of the top priorities of this bill?
You know, the president talked about doing something for opioids, even though his budget actually cut the amount of money we wanted. We have put it in. We put a lot in. I talked with the head of our public safety people, head of our state police yesterday, and others in Vermont. We have a lot of money in here. Vermont will have millions of dollars will come from it, but it will do it so that we can address an opioid crisis, not just in our cities, but in our rural areas. And we can continue the things that have proven very effective in Vermont. I think one of the reasons Vermont has a lower opioid problem, at least on a per capita basis, than our neighboring states, we've done the spoken wheel. It's cost us money to do it, but it's worked. And I put in money into the appropriations bill to make sure that Vermont has the money to continue that.
Senator, I also wanted to talk to you about the president's series of trade tariffs with China. He imposed over $60 billion of tariffs this week on a variety of Chinese goods being imported in this country. Do you support this approach?
No. In fact, it's interesting. Very few people do. You don't tweet things about tariffs that you're starting a trade war. Look what happened. As soon as he tweeted it, the stock market took the third largest drop in history of this country. Hundreds of billions of dollars of investors was lost in a matter of an hour because of the president's tweets. I was I was up in Swanton a week ago where we build evaporators for the for maple syrup industry. They started doing these tariffs. They're not going to be able to compete with other countries like Canada and elsewhere on it. I mean, this could cut jobs. Usually these kind of tariffs in the long run cut jobs. For example, the latest ones, it's interesting, some of the farm areas in the Midwest that had supported Donald Trump suddenly realized they're not going to be able to export the food products that they depend upon for a living.
Well, the president would argue that the tariffs are needed in order to have fair trade with China. Is he wrong?
Everybody wants fair trade with everybody. And the thing is, you go at specific things. You've got the WTO and others. If there's places where they're not being fair, then make a complaint, litigate it. Certainly the biggest concern I have about China is similar to what I have about Russia. They have put together an enormous cyber capability, and they're attacking us constantly. China is trying to steal our trade secrets. I would much rather, instead of trying to collapse the stock market, we took some of that money and worked to build up our cyber defenses. Russia, of course, is doing that on our elections. And they don't want to talk about that, but that is a fact. And then if there are areas where they're really hurting us, then go after those specific ones. It's interesting, China's first reaction, one of their first reactions, well, maybe we shouldn't buy Boeing airplanes. We ought to go to a European company. I mean, some of the things we've talked about with our trade wars and our tariffs, you have a lot of other countries, European countries, and whatnot, say, yeah, you go for it, because it's going to increase their ability to sell goods.
Today on the program, our guest is Senator Patrick Leahy. Our phone number here is 1-800-639-2211. If you've got a question or a comment for the senator, let's start off with Greg, who is calling from Manchester. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, and thanks for your service, Senator.
Thanks, Ray.
I just wanted to ask quickly, both houses and both parties seem to be very willing to pass budgets that increase the deficit. Is there any plan to get that under control?
I think that the plan to get it under control went away when they passed a tax bill, which, instead of helping the middle class, working people, gave away trillions of dollars to extraordinarily wealthy people and wealthy corporations. We saw what happened. These corporations did not create more jobs. They started doing stock buybacks that took care of their investors but did not create jobs. That was the biggest mistake. I think we must look at the deficits. We've had a whole series of things have added to it. For example, going back to the Vietnam War, the first war this country's been in where they didn't have a tax to pay for it. And what George W. Bush did, he took the surplus that Bill Clinton's administration built up, spent on the war, and then did deficit spending of trillions of dollars. We ought to learn about these things.
Let's talk to Barb, who's calling from Washington. Hi, Barb. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you so much for working so hard for us in Washington, Senator Leahy. My question is, how concerned should we be about the potential appointment of John Bolton to national security, since he doesn't have to be approved and he's such a warmonger?
I think it is a horrible mistake to be appointing John Bolton. Remember, this is the man, when he was nominated for our ambassador to the United Nations, both Republicans and Democrats said they wouldn't vote for him. He had to have a recess appointment, which lasted a number of months. He never got confirmed. there are enough Republicans as well as Democrats that vote against him, he couldn't be confirmed. This man would go to war with Iran, with North Korea at the drop of a hat. He was one of the ones that was trying to push us into the war with Iraq using information that was not accurate. No, I think it is a horrible mistake, especially when you're dealing with a president who has absolutely no idea what the consequences might be in a war. His knowledge of the military, I guess, of the five deferments he got from the draft, but it's not going to be, it's not a good move. It is certainly frightening a lot of Republicans as well as Democrats who actually care about what our foreign policy might be.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today is Senator Patrick Leahy. Let's turn to Marco, who is calling from Montreal. Hi, Marco. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
So what's on your mind today, Marco?
Yeah, well, it's basically just to give my opinion on the Mueller investigation and as far as if it is safe and fair to recruit a second special counsel for the investigation. And I believe so. I believe that it's not, in my opinion, it's not necessary to pass to present the law on Congress to protect Mueller after the revelations that we learned on the Hannity show about Mueller. And a second special counsel would be, in my opinion, the right thing to do.
Okay, Marco, thanks very much for your phone call. Senator Leahy, why do you support legislation protecting special counsel Robert Mueller?
Well, I'm not sure how they might do things in Montreal, but here in the United States, I think we have a great deal of respect for Bob Mueller, a twice decorated veteran, Vietnam veteran, Marine, tough, a Republican, brilliant lawyer. He should be allowed to do his investigation. You know, the last time a president fired a special prosecutor was Richard Nixon in Watergate. We know how that turned out. And I think the fact that Republicans and Democrats say, leave Mueller alone, let him look at what was involved with the Russians. How were they? I mean, you're seeing these attacks there. They'll do right-wing media and others. They'll try to attack Mueller. They'll try to attack the FBI, not just for a mistake here or there, but the whole integrity of it. Hundreds, actually thousands of men and women who are dedicated law enforcement people, they attack them. All of this is being done to protect Donald Trump and to make sure the American people never find out whether Russia was involved in our elections. Let the Mueller, just as other Republicans have said and Democrats have said, let the Mueller investigation go forward. When it's done, let's look at it. If you disagree with the results of the investigation, then of course, free to say so. But let's not interfere with it while it's going on.
What do you think the reaction would be in Congress if the president fired Robert Mueller?
I think there would be a very, very strong reaction against that. I think you'd see Republicans and Democrats say this was a horrible mistake on the part of the president. The irony is it might finally give some of the Republican leaders of various committees the courage to go forward and start doing the investigations they should have been doing as soon as we heard about Russian interference in our elections and Russian involvement in trying to manipulate our government.
Senator Leahy, you're a former prosecutor. You've served on the Senate Intelligence Committee. You've seen critical information concerning this investigation. Do you think there was collusion between the Trump campaign and Russian authorities to influence the outcome of the 2016 presidential election?
I'll refer to what has been said publicly by the CIA and others. They said very clearly that Russia was trying to influence us, that Russia was using cyber attacks, bots, and so on to influence the election. What the Mueller investigation will have to find out to what extent that was coordinated with the Trump organization. We know Russia wanted to get involved. We know Russia tried to influence us, as they tried to influence other countries, especially in Europe. We also know that President Trump, no matter what the Russians do, he is very hesitant to ever say anything critical about Vladimir Putin. In fact, called to congratulate him shortly on his unanimous re-election, or virtually unanimous, right after the evidence came out that Russia had poisoned one of their people in England.
Let's turn to Bob, who's calling from Walden. Hi, Bob. What's on your mind today?
Hi. Yes, Senator Leahy, I really appreciate all the good work you do for the citizens of Vermont. I have one comment and two questions. The comment is that I think if the Congress waits until Trump does fire Mueller, which I think is inevitable, it will be too late. And all of the good research that he has been done will be buried away. Two questions I have. One, what power does the Congress have in proactively limiting Trump's ability to unilaterally declare war? And in what way are you working towards such passage of such a law? Thank you.
No, you ask questions on things that keep me awake at night. I think we should protect the investigation. I would like to see legislation like that that Republican Senator Graham and others have proposed to protect the office of the special prosecutor. It would have to be they would have to step up to the plate on that, because you'd have to pass a veto-proof piece of legislation. Otherwise, the president would simply veto it. I think the one good thing is, if he fired Mueller, the information he's gathered so far will be available to investigative committees if they want it. But also, just firing him would be as much an admission of guilt as you can imagine. Now, the War Powers Act requires the Congress to be involved. We actually did this. We voted on the war in Iraq. I voted against the war in Iraq because I thought that we were lied to on the intelligence about it, and it turned out we were. We just had a vote on Yemen, Saudi Arabia being able to use our equipment in Yemen. It was a relatively close vote. Those of us who said there should be restrictions lost, but there are checks and balances. I know there's concern among others, like in the military and so on, that an irrational move might be made by whoever is president. There are steps to try to stop that.
Senator, you haven't been a big fan of many of President Trump's foreign policy initiatives, but do you think he deserves credit for setting up face-to-face talks with the leaders of North Korea?
Have those taken place?
Well, they're supposed to take place in the not-too-distant future.
I mean, let's see what they're doing. Face-to-face talks with no preconditions, that would worry me very much. And it's worrying people who, both from Republicans and Democrats, who have had these negotiations. If it's simply to make a photo op, you end up worse. If you have something with preconditions, if you know at least what the areas are you're going to discuss, well, then it is something that should be supported, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat doing it. But if it's done purely in impulsively and done because of whatever the latest tweet is, well, then that's not the way to conduct negotiations with a hostile nuclear power. Keep in mind, we're talking about a hostile nuclear power. We're talking about the people in Seoul. It's not even a risk of nuclear weapons. The artillery shells loaded with incendiary shells could create millions and millions of casualties in Seoul, literally in a matter of a few minutes. And there'd be no defense against that. It's not like launching a missile and you see it coming, you try to shoot it down. These are thousands of incendiary artillery shells that are aimed at Seoul, could be fired at a moment's notice, and millions of people would die almost immediately.
Senator, we got this email from Peter who wants to know, at some point the NRA contributed $7,000 to your campaign. NRA influence seems to be the only roadblock in Congress from initiating common sense gun control legislation. You yourself support common sense laws regulating guns in Vermont. My question to you, Peter Rodas, is the same as the 17-year-old who asked Senator Rubio, will you stand up to the NRA and openly vow never to accept another donation from the NRA?
You know, we had to go back and actually find that there were any donations. They were done primarily in a fundraiser I did to raise money to help other people. The NRA did make some donations. Some of this was a decade ago. I asked to find out how much was done and then wrote a check for an equal amount to an organization that works to prevent gun violence. Just like the NRA opposed me when I passed through the Judiciary Committee a bill to have universal background checks, do away with the gun show loophole. When I passed legislation to limit the rounds of the semi-automatic and a whole lot of other sensible gun legislation. The NRA opposed all of that. I'm sure they would hope I'd be defeated the next time I ran. I wasn't. But I thought this was the right thing to do, and we passed it. I always felt badly that the Republican leadership refused to allow it to come up in the House where people would have to vote. So, you know, I've had millions of dollars of contributions, and I'm going to, every so often something comes up, we find out that somebody that I disagreed with has set an amount, even if the money's been spent, we take an equal amount of money and give it to a charitable organization. After all, remember, I'm the person, first person to hold extensive hearings, set of hearings after Sandy Hook, and move four bills through, tough bills through the Judiciary Committee. And I was proud that the first witness I called for that was Gabby Gifford.
Senator, I think what Peter's bottom line was, he wants to know, will you pledge never to accept another donation from
the
NRA?
Well, that's easy. I mean, I've already made that clear. I'm not going to accept it because I would be giving it away anyway. So no, if we know that something's come from the NRA, no, it won't be accepted. But I can tell you, with my position on guns, I don't think you're going to ever see the NRA sending money to me.
Let's talk to Howard.
They might to my opponents, but they're not going to send it to me.
Let's turn to Howard, who's calling from Dorset. Hey, Howard, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Senator Leahy, thank you very much for your excellent service on the Appropriations Committee. My question is, what percentage of the omnibus spending bill will go toward passenger rail infrastructure in Vermont? And the second part of the question, the money that's coming to the state of Vermont, will it help move forward the reestablishment of the passenger rail link between Vermont and Montreal?
Yes, it will. The We're working with the state of Vermont now and the Department of Transportation to see how much of the money that we have in here can be used against them. And we're also doing, as part of that, I worked with the Canadian ambassador last week, telling him that I'm putting in a $1.5 billion for the so-called Tiger program. That's a billion over what had been before. We've already received $30 million through the Tiger program to improve our infrastructure. We're going to get millions more that we can use. But what I was talking to the Canadian ambassador and others about was my pre-clearance bill. I passed and enacted a bill for pre-clearance on our side. We want Canada to do the same. And I think that will help a great deal, because you'll be able to get on a train in Montreal and just go straight through to New York down to Washington. I mean, when I was in law school at Georgetown, I used to take the so-called Montrealer back to my home in Montpelier from Washington. There were a lot of Canadians out at that time. They're going straight on to Canada. We've got to do that. The Tiger Grant will help a great deal in the rail beds along the western side of our state. You're from, I think they said Manchester. Certainly that would be very helpful.
Senator, are you concerned that the Federal Department of Transportation is looking at the possibility of ending passenger rail service to Montreal because they don't think it's going to be effective or efficient economically to put safety equipment on that line, and that there aren't enough riders to justify that?
They might feel that way, but now that Canada has gone ahead with the pre-clearance, I think they're going to find a huge increase in ridership. We've got the money in there so they could try it. Let's try it for a year. I think you're going to find a lot of ridership. It's just like when we did the pre-clearance between a couple of the airports and the Burlington Airport. We're suddenly seeing an awful lot of traffic coming down through. You know, Vermont has a great deal to offer. We also, our businesses in Vermont, export more to Canada than we import. These are jobs in Vermont. And what makes them easier is if the transportation is fast and easy between our states.
Let's get a call in from John in Stratford. Hi, John. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. My question, Senator Leahy, is there's been a lot of talk in Vermont about a carbon tax. A lot of us feel that it's a national tax would be much more effective. There's a proposal that's supported by the Chamber of Commerce to put a 25-cent gas and tax on the gas and diesel to help fund the Highway Trust Fund to pay for infrastructure improvements. Would you be in favor of this sort of national carbon tax?
But I'd want to see where the tax is, and I want to be assured that it was going to actually be spent on infrastructure. It's far more appealing if it is going to our roads and bridges. It is not very appealing if it's going to go to other things. I've been worried because this administration has talked about in improving our roads and bridges to do it with toll roads and all. And we all know you're not going to have toll roads in the Northeast Kingdom, for example. Vermont is going to raise the money to do it. So the devil's in the detail. I would not close the door to it, but I would want to see a guarantee that any such money actually goes to improve our roads, improve our bridges.
Senator, I wanted to talk to you about the situation with Facebook, the disclosures this week that the personal profiles of more than 50 million people on Facebook were used by a political consulting firm, a group that provided voter profile and targeting services to the Trump presidential campaign. You're known among your colleagues as being one of the most technologically astute members of Congress. There is a reason why they refer to you as the cyber senator. You're also a user of Facebook. Do you feel betrayed by Facebook?
Yes, I do. A simple answer. And I have a digital privacy and security bill that we should be passing that would help this. But I also think Mark Zuckerberg and others from his company should come before us. I think they should come before the Senate Judiciary Committee. I know Senator Feinstein has asked for the Cambridge Analytics documents. I'd like to get those, but I want it to be a hearing where the public can see what happened. I know that Ms. Sandberg and Mr. Zuckerberg have said that mistakes were made. I think that's an understatement. They were. I find the computers and the ability to do things very, very easy, very helpful. I'm on there all the time. But I expect privacy. And if what I'm doing, if I'm ordering something, if I'm doing other things, I don't want this being sold to somebody making a profile out of me. Now, I can tell them if they are going to make a profile and want to know how I'm going to vote, I can tell you right now how I was going to vote, especially in the last Senate election. But it's, of course, that's a flippant response. The real response is we Vermonters believe in privacy, and this is a horrible breach of privacy. If you combine the ability to do this with a country like Russia that's trying to influence our elections, you've got a major national security issue. It goes beyond just having what kind of appliance might you buy. It goes way beyond that. The dangers to our democracy are too great.
But, Senator, realistically—
Incidentally, when you call me the cyber senator, I sometimes have my grandchildren and they see me trying to figure out something and they have to show me how to do it. They say, whoever named you the cyber senator?
But realistically, Senator, should people really expect that any of their personal information is going to remain private in the world today? I mean, isn't this the cost of having these technological advances?
You assume if you've got something in your house that somebody can't walk in and pick it out and look at it. Simply because you put it online, you should have at least some sense of privacy. Is it being looked at? Can it be looked at? Of course, people can hack into this. But I think Americans should have a lot more sense of privacy than they currently have. I think that the whole thing is going to start falling apart if people think they don't have that privacy. There are being able to make an analysis of you and knowing what kind of things to send to you to get you how to vote. I mean, this is a treasure trove for countries like Russia and others that want to influence our democracy. And when you have a billion people, more than a billion people on Facebook, I think the people who are making billions of dollars out of that, they have some responsibility.
Do you see a role for Congress to regulate Facebook going forward?
I think that we have to first have the hearings, know exactly what's happened and how we protect people's privacy. Certainly one of the things we should have, If your details about you are being found, you should have an easy way, a very easy way to opt out and be able to use it, be able to use what you want without it being shared elsewhere. We're consumers of this stuff. We should demand accountability. But the Congress is supposed to represent all Americans. The Congress should demand accountability. It hasn't done that enough yet, and I think it's going to have to, and I think it will.
Senator, I wanted to ask you about this situation. This week in Mississippi, the governor there appointed that state's first woman senator. And this appointment gives Vermont the distinction of being the only state in the country that has never elected a woman to either the U.S. House or the U.S. Senate. Why do you think this is the case?
I don't know. Now, California has 15 or 20 women in there. We ought to have 15 or 20 women from Vermont, if the only criteria is that. But we've had some wonderful women who have gotten elected. I know Madeline Cunin was elected governor. Had she wanted to, I think she could have easily been elected to the Congress. She decided not to run. That has to be her decision. But look at our legislature. I think about what it was like when I was a kid. Practically no women in our legislature. Now we have one of the highest percentages in the country. I've raised huge amounts of money around the country for women candidates. I've held fundraisers for women candidates. I've done them not only in Vermont, but in Texas and California and everywhere else to send money to them. We are a better Senate because of the number of women that come in there. I hope Vermont does have women in House and Senate. But let's not compare too much apples to oranges. A lot of states are larger than ours. There's more chance, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't have. We should have more women in our legislature, more women as governors, more women as in the Congress. I nominated the first woman to be a U.S. attorney in Vermont. That was and she's there because I did that. The first woman to be a federal judge in Vermont was nominated by me. I'm doing everything possible to make this.
Senator, we have just about a minute left. I'm just wondering what you think the outlook is for some of the gun legislation in the coming weeks.
If the members of the Congress would listen to the young people that are down here, they should pass them next week. They have brought an energy to this we have not seen before, even though we've had a lot of people who have testified. This makes me think of the Women's March right after the inauguration, helped a great deal in getting pro-women legislation passed. This, I hope, will open the eyes of people who have refused to back legislation like mine.
So you think this time is really different?
I hope it's different. I've told everybody I will continue to vote for and push for the kind of legislation that I've already passed through the Senate, this time hoping the Republican leadership in the House and Senate will let it go forward.
We'll be following many of these issues in the weeks ahead. Senator Patrick Leahy, many thanks for taking the time to be on Vermont Edition today.
Good to be with you. Thank you.